independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Silver of the 538 blog has documented that in 1992, a quarter of House districts were swing districts, meaning that the result of the presidential race would be decided within 5 percentage points. But look at the yellow. By 2016, that number had decreased to just 37. In other words, 398 of 435 districts were no longer in play. That explains the lack of compromise that you see in Congress, because there's no incentive when members represent only the like-minded.
That right there was Michael Smirkanish. He was on CNN, and they were talking about redistricting, gerrymandering. It's frustrating. I live in California. We have little, you know, enclaves of some conservative areas or maybe some more libertarian areas. And then you've got just essentially a giant blue state. Growing up in California, I would never, ever matter as far as my vote goes. Very rarely. Unless you vote for a Democrat, the chances of you voting for somebody who, for all intents and purposes, represents your values or where you think the state should head. And I'm not saying I vote all Republican, because I don't. I voted Democrat. I voted independent. I have voted Republican. And I've abstained on some stuff, too. I've stayed away from some stuff where I just think I don't want to be a part of this. But it is frustrating. It is. Because we have got this system that is so screwy, where they draw districts and lines. These people become entrenched there. The lines are drawn so they don't lose. Redistricting has to happen. It is beyond frustrating. We create areas where this will be a conservative stronghold. This will be a stronghold for liberals. It's insane. It really is. And it makes politics not as unpredictable as I think a lot of people would like to think it can be. Like anything's up for grabs. That's not true. Very rarely do you see people losing seats. And when it does happen, either the person has done something horrifically wrong, or the demographics of the area has changed considerably. Not because the hearts and minds of the people that were there changed. The demographics changed. People moved out. New people moved in. And in doing so, it changed. It went from a conservative to a liberal. It went from a progressive to a conservative side of things. That's what you see. Not because the people that originally put, you know, Senator or Congressman X in here, and we got to change so-and-so out because we're just not happy with he or she's politics and the way they've done things. No. It's not that way. Instead, it's a different kind of way, which is demographics have changed. And all of a sudden, what was once a conservative area is now a liberal area. What was once a progressive area has become a more conservative area. You can't blame it always on the politicians, right? Because we do it to ourselves. We pigeonhole, we segregate in a lot of ways amongst other people.
We've seen a 56% decline in the number of competitive seats in the House since 1997, but according to a study we're going to put out next month, 83% of that decline has been to factors other than redistricting, which happens every 10 years. What's happening is that voters are gerrymandering themselves. They're choosing to live in like-minded areas where the vast majority of their friends and neighbors agree with their political values. And I think we've proven that by looking at the data of Whole Foods versus Cracker Barrel.
And this is very interesting. So there's this data about Cracker Barrel and Whole Foods. When you think of Whole Foods, you think of young, upward mobile, you know, middle-aged, hippie, white people that go to these places that are all about recycling and they're not Trump supporters and they're all about granola and climate change. When you think about Cracker Barrel, you think of, you know, white, middle class, more conservative, churchgoers. It's a very interesting way to look at things.
There's another way of thinking about our cocooning. Cracker Barrel versus Whole Foods. In 1992, Bill Clinton got elected, and the gap between Cracker Barrel counties and Whole Food counties was only 19%. But in the election that just ended, Donald Trump won 76% of counties with a Cracker Barrel, only 22% of counties with a Whole Foods. In other words, the gap had grown to 54%. How did we get from there to here?
That is interesting. But you can see that, right? Like, if you think about it, Cracker Barrel, Golden Corral, well, any of these things, they're more rural usually. They're in places that, you know, more of a bigger family kind of thing. And it's just, I see it. I do. And when you go to Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's or some of those places, Simply Fresh, it's people that are more technologically driven, people that are a little bit younger, probably. Definitely, they're more concerned about the environment. And it's a very bizarre way to look at things. But it's real. Again, it's truth. You point at this, and it's truth. It is what it is. These things are very real. Very real. And we have to figure out a better way to get out of this gerrymandering, people entrenched in areas, because we've gotten to the point now, and this is the thing. Before, it used to be, hey, you know what? So-and-so won the election, but he or she has promised that they're here for everybody. It's not that way anymore. Now you only care about your voters. That's it. You don't care about anybody else. You're not worried about hearing from the other side. You don't care what the other side thinks. You don't care what their feelings are. You don't care how it affects them. You only care about your side. How does this affect me? How does this affect me staying here and keeping my position?
Because it's a different cause. It's not the districting that is producing the polarization. It's happening in the Senate. Why is the Senate as polarized as the House? There's no districting for the Senate whatsoever. There are other causes of this. And, you know, as you know, if you ask me, the primary, one of the primary ones is primary elections. So you've got 5 to 10% of the voters in each party turning out from the, you know, most extreme wings of the parties, picking the candidates. Exacerbated by the things you talked about earlier in the show, which is money and media, which, you know,
absolutely
balance out maybe the general election, but have a huge effect in these primary elections with tiny little electorates.
It is crazy, though. I mean, it is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because it's the same person. Nobody should be a politician for 40 or 50 years. Nobody should be. Nobody should be in the same, you know, just bounce from Congress to the Senate. Nobody should do that, running for the president. I mean, even look at now. It's like you've got, you know, people that are just, hey, you know what, I'm termed out here, but I'm going to go become a senator now. Or I was a, you know, I ran for president, Mitt Romney, and now I think I'm going to run for the Senate or Congress. It's ridiculous. It really, really is. But this is what happens, and we've created this. And they talk about like minds. Yeah, we've gotten to that point. I tell you all the time, diversity is in the mind. If you could have a diverse mindset, that's amazing. If you're willing to be able to sit there and talk to people who don't share the same views as you, that's incredible. Most people aren't. Most people want nothing to do with anybody who doesn't share their same viewpoint. And I find that to be sad. We used to be so open-minded about stuff. And just because you say you're open-minded doesn't mean you're somehow a progressive, right? Just because you say you're open-minded and you are progressive and you want to meet people of different, you know, political ideology and beliefs doesn't mean somehow that you're going to jump ship and become this ultra-conservative person. What you're saying is, that's great. I would like to open the scope of people that are my friends. I've got friends, most of my friends are very, very liberal. Most of my friends are very liberal. We don't see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. They've opened my mind and eyes to certain things. I've opened theirs to a lot of stuff as well. Have got them to look at things in a much different way. I'm not trying to change who they are. They're not trying to change who I am. But it doesn't mean we can't have conversations about stuff. But we have gotten to that point where we have forced ourselves to segregate ourselves because we don't want to hang out with somebody who's like-minded. We only want to hang out with somebody who's like-minded, not somebody who has a different viewpoint. You drive down the street and you're a young couple that's very progressive and you see Trump signs and you're looking for a house, the chances that you are going to move there are slim to none. Not because you don't like the neighborhood. Maybe you don't like the neighbors because they have a belief system that is wholly different than yours. That's how the segregation is working now. Not just about money, skin color. It's like-mindedness. And I always think if you're being that like-minded about certain things, you know, you're closing yourself off to the world. Don't close yourself off to the world. Open yourself up. You never know what's out there. It's amazing the things that are out there. It's amazing what you can learn from other people if you're honest and you're willing to learn stuff. And I have never been to, I have been to a Cracker Barrel. I have never been to a Golden Corral. You ever been to a Golden Corral, Producer Phil?
Yeah, once or twice.
I have never been there. Now, I like Cracker Barrel. I got nothing against it. When I was in San Antonio, I had a Cracker Barrel. I went there on great breakfast. Been there a couple times for dinner, but I love the breakfast there. And Producer Anthony's from the South, so that's just like, yeah. It doesn't matter where you are. Republican, Democrat, progressive, conservative. You get a lot of food and you go to the Cracker Barrel. I will say this. I've been to Whole Foods a couple times as well. It's okay. You know, I've been to Trader Joe's. I've been to Simply Fresh. You know, it all depends what I need. So why can't you do both, right? Why can't you do both? The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBenson, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You could text the program, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. We're talking about the guy that was pulled off the flight from Chicago to Louisville. If you've seen the video or you haven't, just check it out again. It's at ChadBensonShow.com. What is your story, flights? Bad, good, indifferent. Text the program, 323-538-2423. You can call us as well, 844-DIG-CHAT, 844-344-2423. What's next? Chad Benson Show.
It's not that he's particularly intuitive or even psychic. He's just weird this way. It's What's Next with Chad Benson.
Education's What's Next, baby! Somebody's like, oh my God, you called her a baby. That is so sexploitation. What's next for education? Interesting what Wisconsin is doing. And I really, really like this. Scott Walker is essentially saying to the teachers in Wisconsin, hey, we're going to get out of your way, and our new budget calls for you to decide how long seat hours are for students, butts in seats. Meaning, right now it's about 437 hours for kindergartners, about almost 1,100 hours for elementary, and almost 1,200 hours for secondary schools. So essentially, you guys decide what you need to do to get your kids taught. Stop leaving it up to some random idea. What's next for school? I'm hoping for education and schooling is that Betsy DeVos really starts to allow teachers to become a part of what goes on in the classrooms, more so than administrators, than some sort of edict that comes down to teachers telling them, this is what I want you to do. This is how this should be taught. This is this. I think far too often we don't have enough teachers actually being able to quote unquote teach. Meaning they teach, but they're teaching crap that they know in many ways is irrelevant. They're teaching stuff and people's like, Chad, learning is never relevant. No, it's not, but learning has become much different. We have not changed with the time. What's next, I hope, is that more and more states will look at different ways to engage children and to teach children better, smarter, more intense, with more downtime, more freeing, and allow teachers to actually become the masters of the curriculum and teach the kids. People are like, well, each teacher is going to be different. Look, schooling is so, again, we're in a competitive world right now. Competition is fierce worldwide. Our kids need a different way to learn. This same old same just doesn't work. It's time to look at things that are different. Here's a perfect example. How many of you listening who've gone through college with a four-year degree, really needed 75% of those classes. Very few of you. Very few of you. Many of those classes you took were just a waste of time. Now you get a master's degree and you spend 2 years in the field that you're going to work in and you hyper-focus on it. You could have done that in that 4 years. It's about achievement. It's not actually about doing something where you're learning something and putting something towards an education. And that's true. My mom, when she went through and she got her psychology degree, we laugh about it all the time. She took more useless stuff that had zero to do with what she was focusing on and what she was trying to learn. I would rather you have 20 psychology courses than 5 psychology courses, some English, some math, some this, that. Again, we need to change our thinking when it comes to education. And I'm hoping, you know, with Betsy DeVos, we'll see something. I don't know. And I like what Scott Walker's trying to do. But what's next for education is we've got to start thinking outside the box. Because in many ways, not only is it because teachers are teaching several different kids who don't speak English in every class in a lot of places across this country, but also because we have an antiquated system that is run by bureaucrats rather than by teachers and people who've got long histories in education and actually teaching in the classroom, and they're not having their voices heard when it comes to teaching. That's what's next for education. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBenson, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You can text the program as well, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. Commander Kurt Lippold is going to join us next. He was the commander on that fateful day of the USS Cole that was attacked. He's going to talk about Syria. He's going to talk about the things that are going on, not only in Syria, but also North Korea. We have moved some ships over there to the peninsula. Is this just something that is random, out of the ordinary, extraordinary? Is there more to it? We're going to talk to him about all of those things. Commander Kurt Lippold is going to join us next right here on the Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thoughts and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
A lot happened last week, obviously, with what took place in Syria. It ramped up later on in the week when we decided to launch a few tomahawks, lob a few their way. Joining us now is a man who knows a lot about tomahawks and a lot of stuff that goes on out there in the world of war and nastiness. Former Commander Kurt S. Lippold, of course, he was in charge of the Cole. Way back in the day when it was attacked, Commander Lippold, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate this.
Thank you, Chad. Great to be on.
So first and foremost, you know, this whole Assad thing, this is a nightmare that's going on out there. And you have been in the military for as long as you have. You look at something like this and you're out of it now and you look and you're more about the geopolitical side of things. What's your take on all of what's going on over there?
I think right now is that with Assad not only using chemical weapons in the past, negotiating an agreement to get rid of them all, not living up to that agreement, and clearly, you know, as I think Secretary of State Tillerson put it, the Russians were either complicit or incompetent because they're the ones that said, we will ensure that Assad has no chemical weapons. He clearly has used them and continues even today, evidently using white phosphorus against people. But what you're seeing more important is the United States is finally making a stand for the first time ever. That strike into Syria is the first time the United States took a proactive role to go after that country and hold them accountable for their actions. We've never done that. For decades, we've never done that. Syria's always had a bubble over it, so this is about time and long overdue.
You know, you talk about Russia and a lot of people, of course, this, you know, the nightmare that is the Russian, you know, ties between this, you know, the former campaign and now the president and the whole nine yards. But Russia promised us. I mean, they had scrambled jets. They had jets in the air, French jets flying to Syria last time the red line was drawn, and Kerry told them to come back. And Russia said this will never happen again. They had to have known that something was going on. They can't be that stupid.
I don't think they are. I think that Russia has, I mean, especially when you've been in that country for as long as the Russians have worked with the Assad government, you know, the father and now Bashar al-Assad, they know what goes on. Their intelligence is telling them what is happening. So the reality is they were turning a blind eye toward these chemical weapons. And even though they were able to negotiate agreement to get rid of them, clearly they were unwilling to do what was necessary to completely take them away from Assad. And that makes them complicit.
Absolutely. Talking to Kurt Lippold, former commander of the USS Cole, as we talk about Syria and the nightmare that is. I said this last week, and I reiterate this. I think in 12 months, Syria will have broken up and just no longer even exist as a country anymore. Do you think there's a chance, realistically, that he survives this? Bashar al-Assad has a small piece of land that they'll call Syria, and the rest of it will break up and be absorbed by surrounding nations?
I think the nation is going to continue to exist. I think what the Russians are going to do at this point is we should try and create the conditions that if Assad is going to stay, that Russia is going to need to hold them accountable to international law and to the agreements they've signed up for, and they're going to have to figure out how to win this war conventionally. He's a brutal dictator, but it was crossing that line where he was using chemical weapons when he was told not to, that this president finally stood up to. I mean, it was unfortunate that we drew a red line and backed away from it because the United States lost huge credibility as a result of that decision by President Obama. And I think even many in the Obama administration look back on that with regret because it did create additional complications down line. So I'm glad to see that we're enforcing it, and I'm glad to see that, that Secretary of State Tillerson is going to Moscow. As always, I would much rather see a diplomatic solution than a military one in this case. But, you know, I think how we arrange this transition of power, it's going to be very tricky.
You know, you talk about, I mean, can Assad really survive this? I mean, that to me is nobody seems to want him there, minus him and his loyal backers. And let's be real, the Russians really don't care. They got what they wanted, right? They wanted a port and they wanted a foothold in that part of the world. They've now got it. At this point in time, does it matter who is in charge of that country?
Well, what Russia doesn't want to be seen, like any country, if they're backing Assad and suddenly pull out, all the other countries that are relying on Russia for support, same as what we would do, they would start questioning them. And the Russians can't afford it. That's why in some way we need to find a longer diplomatic solution that may allow for the transition of power from the Assad family to the people of Syria and allow them to begin to choose the government that they wish to live under. But that is not done overnight. It takes time and it takes an investment because from Russia's eyes, and you have to look at it through their eyes, they want to ensure that they still have a say in the future so that they can preserve things like that access to the warm water port, so that they have a country that is willing to buy their weapons because it supports their industry. So there's a lot of factors that go into this that make it so it can't be solved overnight or quickly.
Talking to Commander Kurt Lippold, former commanding officer of the USS Cole. You know, I look at it is a rat's nest there. It is horrible there. You've been in that part of the world. Obviously, you've seen all of what goes on there. Is that part of the world, though, Commander Lippold, is that part of the world ready for the kind of democracy? Aren't we kind of over nation building? Because I look and I just think so many of these countries, if you handed them democracy today, they don't know what to do with it. They need to be handheld through the whole thing, which usually cost us lives and it cost us money.
That is a great point, because the reality is you say they deserve freedom. Well, they've never had it, so they don't know the precious gift that they were given. They don't know how to operate under. And if we do step in there and we decide that, okay, we're going to take out Assad and there's going to be nation building, that lies in the arena of the Department of State, certainly not the Department of Defense. And we've seen the consequences when it goes the other way around. So it would be a long, arduous process. But part of that, if you look, you're right, it doesn't come instantly. Look at Japan. Look at Germany. Look at South Korea. It took decades of investment for us there to get those nations to a point where they were operating successfully as democracies, where they had joined and were able to become economic powerhouses in the world and be able to provide for their people in a way they had to learn democracy in many ways, getting away from a king, getting away from a brutal dictator. So, you know, even Korea was having its problems as late as the 1960s.
Yeah. I mean, it is crazy. Talking to Commander Lippold, former commanding officer of the USS Cole. So we move from there, right? We move from this nasty part of the world now that has just become a hive's nest of, you know, crazy lunacy. And we go over and then we look and see what's happening in North Korea. I just want to ask a few questions about that, because we moved over to the USS Vincent. How normal is what we're doing in moving some of these ships over to some of these waters? Or is this more of a precautionary kind of, we're just going to, you know, just a little reassurance that we're there for, you know, Japan and for South Korea?
I think at this point it is precautionary in nature. If I recall my facts correctly, April 15th was the establishment of the North Korean regime. There's obviously preparations underway that we can tell for doing a possible nuclear test. And I think we're sending a signal to both the Chinese and the North Koreans. And in my opinion, and most importantly, we're sending it to the Chinese. I mean, at this point in time, we need to almost stop looking at North Korea and what we can do to them. Nothing has worked. It is time for us to look at the country who aids and abets them technically, financially, diplomatically, and start holding China accountable for continuing to allow that country to develop and use nuclear weapons, to develop ballistic missiles that threaten the United States of America as well as the entire Southeast Asia region. It's time for us to say no more. China, get him under control or we will. And I think we've essentially said that.
You know, to me, I look at, look, obviously what we did last week was an eye-opener. It was, I think, a way that, you know, we're no longer leading from behind. We're leading from the front when you saw what happened in Syria. I think the message was sent to a lot of different, you know, people out there. But I still look at Kim Jong-un as a much bigger threat, because simply he has got nuclear weapons. And I don't even think the people inside of there that may realize how lunatic he is have any idea what move he's going to make.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's why most people nowadays look at North Korea as the primary threat to the United States by a rogue regime. Another aspect that also needs to be considered is, don't think this is just North Korea doing this when it comes to the ballistic missile tests and the nuclear weapons. The Iranians are embedded in there. They're watching what's going on. They are learning from the tests. They're paying well to make sure that they have access to that technology, because that is going to significantly shorten their breakout time 10 years from now when they have an opportunity to build a bomb themselves.
You know, you talk about Iran, and obviously Iran's influence in Syria is great. And then, of course, they're over there learning what they possibly can from North Korea. We've talked about it, you know, on numerous occasions, I'm sure on just about every show in the world about Iran. How do you think within these 10 years, because remember, what was it, 1990, you know, we were doing the same thing, this song and dance with North Korea, and they weren't going to get a nuclear weapon. And then by 93, 94, they had a nuclear weapon. You think it's similar, though, for Iran, that they're on their way to maybe getting themselves a nuclear weapon, maybe even before this 10 years?
Absolutely, I believe that. While many people will argue that the nuclear agreement stopped them from getting a nuclear weapon, it still provides them with a pathway because we refuse to enforce some of the provisions specifically related to ballistic missiles. So all they will need to do at this point is get the delivery vehicle down, have that in reserve, be able to threaten the Middle East with conventional and potentially Europe. And then over time, they're going to continue to work with the North Koreans on the miniaturization of the warhead, on the actual implementation of it. And when they will have that technology in their hip pocket, and when the time comes, they cut off the nuclear inspectors, they spin up the centrifuges, and next thing you know, they have a delivery vehicle and a nuclear weapon within a matter of weeks, if not months. And the next thing you know is we are very worried because now we've got two nations pointing nuclear weapons that can threaten our cities.
Last question. I appreciate you coming on today. Commander Kurt Lippold, former commanding officer of the USS Cole. You talk about them getting nuclear weapons, and we talk about those things, but I don't think people realize it makes you such a player on the world stage. And it also is it's a giant deterrent and a huge defender of your nation. I mean, look at Ukraine. They gave up everything, and they were invaded in a matter of no time. And, you know, but you look at somebody like Pakistan and India, where while there's massive tension, they're wary of each other because of the might that comes with the weapons that they have.
You're absolutely right. You have to remember, and I look back to when I was studying nuclear weapons policy at the Naval Postgraduate School back in the days of the big bad Soviet Union. At the end of the day, nations pursue to possess nuclear weapons for one reason only. Their governments view it as the ultimate guarantor of their survival, because no nation that has gotten a nuclear weapon has ever been invaded and taken over. And what you have to do is, okay, if you want to stop a country from having nuclear weapons, then part of that agreement is going to be that you are going to recognize their ability to continue to exist until some point in the future when maybe the circumstances will allow for a peaceful transition away from that government, however it may be, to another one where the people have a say. But until we create those conditions, these countries like Iran, like North Korea, are going to continue to pursue to possess nuclear weapons because they view it as the ultimate guarantor of their theocracy and their dictatorship to exist.
His name is Commander Kurt S. Lippold, former commanding officer of the USS Cole. We appreciate you coming on today. We know you've been very busy, Commander Lippold. We look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Great. And thank you for having me on. And thank you for all your listeners and the support they give the troops that are out there defending our freedom.
Thank you. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBensonShow.com. Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. Text the program, 323-538-2423. It's the Chad Benson Show.
You call it ridiculous. We call it reality with a twist. Say what?
Say what? You see that glass bottom pool 40 stories up? It's kind of neat because it hangs out over everything. And it's walking on one of those things that hangs out over, like, say, for instance, the Grand Canyon's one thing. Getting inside of a pool 40 stories up and swimming, you gotta think to yourself, is this something I really want to do? Is this something I'm up for? I'd do it, but it's very interesting, man. Just waiting for that crack, right? Just next thing you know,
I'd do it.
No! How'd you die? I was swimming and I fell 40 stories. That makes no sense. It doesn't. I don't eat vegetables, and there's a reason for it.
Health officials are advising two people in Florida to be tested for rabies after finding a dead bat in their salad. The Centers for Disease Control said Saturday the bat was found in a bag of Fresh Express Organic Market Side Spring Mix sold at Walmart. The bat was in a deteriorated state, so there's no way to confirm rabies. A recall is, of course, underway. Lisa Campbell, NBC News Radio.
Again, a deteriorated state. Of course it is. Because if you open up the bag and there's a bat that you can recognize as a bat, you're not going to eat the bat. Unless, of course, you're weird or you're Ozzy Osbourne. But, you think to yourself, What did it taste like? Did it taste like chicken? Did you have to have a lot of dressing? What goes good with bat? That has got to say. Do they still do rabies shots the old-fashioned way? They can't do that, right?
No.
Remember when you were a kid, it was as, like in the stomach?
Bad as it used to be.
Okay. God, that I couldn't even imagine that. In your stomach, all of those shots? Sweet mama jamma, that's got to suck. But this is, again, a reason why vegetables are... You could skip your veggies. You can skip your veggies. I'm just saying. No, you should never skip your veggies. But Anthony pointed out something is very... Like, when I go get a salad, it's either from a restaurant or I go get a salad. If I get one from the store, it's in the containers, those little plastic things. I don't do the big bag of stuff because it just... It calls and screams for Listeria and all kinds of stuff like that. It calls. It's like... It just... It looks like it's breeding stuff inside of there. That's it. You may do it differently. I don't know. I'm just letting you know. By the way, speaking of eating, a man, competitive eater... ate 255 marshmallow peeps. That is disgusting. One peep is gross. 255? Ugh. It's the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show.